is Sportsveld, meaningful September baseball, baby. We've arrived. We've made it. What a difference a week makes. The Blue Jays, six straight. They've won six straight games since last Sportsveld. And I am talking to myself right now. Well, no, I'm talking to you, the Sportsveld listener, of course. But there is no other person on the line at this moment. Our good friend, my number two, my co-host, Jake Goldsby, is taking a well-earned vacation. He is on the East Coast. He is enjoying staring at the ocean and eating seafood, which, yeah, I'll say it, makes me a little bit jealous. But I get to talk about the friggin' red-hot Toronto Blue Jays, who are 9-2 in their last 11, who have earned, at least as of time of recording, a split against the New York Yankees. Could be 3 or 4 by the time this comes out. I don't want to get ahead of myself and jinx it, but things are looking up. The Jays have worked themselves all the way back to 2.5 games back of the American League wild card, the top wild card. It's just Boston and New York in front of them. They've all that worry about Seattle and Oakland are in front of them. Nope, dealt with, gone. Oakland out of the way, swept. The most dramatic game this team has had in quite some time on Friday. That Friday night comeback. One for the ages, the grand slam by Lourdes Gurriel Jr., the foul out, and then walk from Alejandro Kirk, who has had an unbelievable week since we last spoke. It's been amazing. It's been can't miss. They are unbelievable to start the month of September. It is everything you could possibly want. And as well, we spent a lot of August, the beginning of August, to be honest with you, the first half of August being like, oh my goodness, they just went 9-2 again, you know, after the deadline and getting Barrios. They just went 9-2 and they didn't make up any ground. Oh my God, what a mess. But in that same token, when they slid later in the month, when they had their issues, when they couldn't hit for 2 weeks, they didn't really get that far behind. Nobody pulled away from them. And then when it mattered, when it really truly mattered, they swept the A's and they convincingly won the first two games against the Yankees. The offense it certainly appears to be back. The pitching continues to be what it has been in the second half, which is to say, Steven Matz's second half ERA is 2.2. Alek Manoah has continued to look the part of a major leaguer, a confident major leaguer. Robbie Ray, maybe the best pitcher in the American League. He's been incredible. He's made himself hundreds of millions of dollars in the last 2 months. And listen, Hyunjin Ryu, now what are we talking about here? 4-starter? So it's been a pretty interesting little run. And after all those times when they were hot and everybody else stayed hot and then they got cold and everybody else stayed cold, somebody pointed out, I think it might have been Glenn Allen Chill on Twitter pointed out, something like 14 straight games have gone the Jays' way as the Jays are on a 6-game winning streak and basically everybody else they're in competition with is on a losing streak of some, you know, minuscule to fairly sizable degree. So it's not just a great time to be a Blue Jays fan. It's the best time, probably all year, to be a Blue Jays fan. You can tell in my demeanor, I think. Listen, this is all we ever wanted, right? On this show, you can roll it back. Obviously, we wanted them to be a contender. We want them to win the World Series. We want them to be the best team in the league. But all we were asking for this year was, at this point, 25 games left, just under a month. I think October 3rd, I think, is their last game. So this will be the just under a month podcast. They are 100% in it, and there is no reason to miss basically anything else the rest of the way. It's thrilling. It's super duper duper thrilling. I can't wait. And as much as you would love to hear me, I'm sure, talk to myself about this for 40 minutes, and if you are that kind of person, by the way, patreon.com/sportsfeld. It's all Blue Monday is. It's just this. Just me talking to myself. Which, again, I think I might be the biggest fan of Blue Monday. To be honest with you. But to break all this down, it couldn't just be me. It cannot just be me because all I do is agree with myself. I wanted to get some insight from somebody else, talk to somebody else about my Blue Jays excitement, the vibe check, and I went right to the source. One of my favorite people, you know, for me, pound for pound, the best in the biz when it comes to talking about baseball in a way that makes me laugh. Drew Fairservice from The Athletic podcast, Spin Rate, which he does with Caitlin McGrath and does with a variety of guests twice a week. Gotta respect that. And the Vlad Religion newsletter, which is great reading. for those of you who were back on Blogspot reading Ghost Runner on First like I was. He once asked me to write for Ghost Runner on First, and I think I did like three pieces. But secret, you know, the world's worst kept thing about me continuing getting hired in media places is I don't like writing. You know, I would always get hired as a blogger or writer, and I the process of writing brings me no joy. I don't like writing really at all. I like writing things that I get to say out loud because I like talking, and I like to think every now and then I'm pretty okay with it. This whole talking thing. Anyway, we start with the easiest, which is a vibe check. This has been a roller coaster throughout the month of August, but now we sit. I mean, how could you be complaining about 16 winning streak and 2.5 back of the Yankees and the Red Sox in the last month of the season? How are you feeling? How is you have a much worse mentions than I do. How are you feeling? How are the mentions feeling? How is everything feeling coming into this home stretch?
Mentions are pretty good, frankly. My mentions as a rule are pretty good. I don't have quite as many followers as some others. You can see when I, you know, you pick up folks and I'm like, oh, this one's gonna be a problem. Look at that. Oh, is he holding the fish? This is gonna end in tears. But the vibe is obviously really good. You know, there's a lot of there's still transactions, right? People are still got transactions on the mind, even though the teams will have won 6 in a row against the teams they need to beat the most. There was so much lamented about, you know, the series in Seattle, and then they had to go to Washington, and then they had a series against Detroit. You know, this is where they need to make hay against these bad teams, and they didn't do it. And now here they are beating up on Oakland and the Yankees, catching them at the right time. Things are going their way. So the vibe is good. People are excited. There's a lot of talk about who's going to pitch when, and I think you know, people are really legitimately excited about the Blue Jays' chances here throughout the rest of 2021. But there's still like transaction talk, and I have definitely contributed to that too, talking about, oh, should the Blue Jays sign Marcus Semien, or should it be Robbie Ray, or should it be neither, or what are they going to do in the future? So the vibe is good. People are excited. Obviously, when the team is playing well, when you've got guys like Semien and Ray and even Steven Matz who are, you know, here for just this season and they're playing so well, the talk is inevitably turning to what is in their future. But I think the present is exciting. Look, they're a really exciting bunch. They swing at everything. They hit the ball harder than anybody when they're going well or when they're not going awful. They hit lots of home runs, which makes them a really fun team to watch. We saw last week that game against Oakland, that crazy comeback, which is fueled by home runs, right? Home runs make all the difference. So when the Blue Jays are right, they're hitting home runs. It's a lot of fun to watch. It's easy to see them being a really tough team to play against and maybe squeaking in and making some noise in the playoffs too.
Last night's hero, my guy, A1 since day one, Albacore, Alejandro, the little tuna can, the only real athlete on earth, Alejandro Kirk. I bring this up because my friend Will DM'd me the other day, and I want to very specifically get Will an answer. He's like, why is everybody so high on Alejandro Kirk? I was like, listen, man, he's top 10 in shortest and top 10 in heaviest players in the league. If you need more than that, I don't know if I can help you. But also, he's muscling out Gerrit Cole, 99, the opposite field. You have mentioned before that it almost feels like stealing when Alejandro Kirk is good. I've talked to Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, who is as big of an Alejandro Kirk guy as you will find. We love our giant pudgy son, don't we?
We love him so. He's really interesting as well because I think it was David Singh that wrote the great story for Sportsnet about when the Blue Jays signed him and how there's just so much like conditioning and kind of setting the stage before anybody sees him. Like, look, he doesn't look the part. You need to know that. And then someone goes and sees him. They're like, oh, come on, this guy, this human fire hydrant, you're trying to tell me he's going to get there behind the plate and do the job. But, I mean, whether or not Alejandro Kirk is going to have a Yadier Molina-length career, I don't know. I don't think that's really the thing to focus on right now. The thing to focus on right now is he's doing the thing exactly as you said. He is a hitter. He hits. He has great at-bats. Big velocity doesn't phase him. He's happy to ride 99 from Gerrit Cole out to the opposite field. He barrels the baseball. He doesn't strike out. He only walks when he has to, kind of. Like I wouldn't say that he has he's not as hyper aggressive as like maybe Lourdes Gurriel or Bo Bichette or some of the other guys, but he is just such a good hitter. And the biggest thing about Alejandro Kirk and why it does feel like stealing is that the Blue Jays have continued to challenge him. Because I think when you have a guy like that, you're like, well, what do we have to lose, right? What do we have to lose? Okay, so we'll move him up from high A to the to the alternate site and see how he does against higher level, higher caliber pitching. It's like, oh, he's hit everything. So let's throw him on the roster at the end of the season, you know, in, as we're headed to the playoffs, you know, mixed bag as that was for where the Blue Jays were. And they're putting him into situations where they're asking him to do difficult things in important games, and he's up to the challenge. He, you know, there's a lot made about his defensive reputation, his defensive skill, but he's far from unplayable. He had one glaring pass ball that kind of cost the Blue Jays a game, or a wild pitch, but they put him on the roster on opening day. Every time they challenge him to say, like, let's see what we got. Like, what do we have here with Kirk? Okay, put him on the opening day roster, and then he hits. Then he gets hurt, and then he comes back. And it's like, oh, he's probably going to have to, you know, fight for a spot a little bit. You know, Reese McGuire's playing pretty well. Danny Jansen's on his way back. He just hits. He just hits, and he loves throwing. Robbie Ray clearly loves throwing to them. I mean, Robbie Ray doesn't really matter at this point. He's pitching so well. But, like, there's nothing to not like about him. Again, just because he's playing now, and if you don't like the way that his body looks, which a lot of people don't, which is because you talk about my mentions, if you have anything to say about Alejandro Kirk, or heaven forbid you say something about him on Reddit, and there's all these body shamers that come out and be like, he needs to spend the winter learning his position and working on his fitness. It's like they're putting him in there to DH as well as catch because they love his bat so much. Like, he's doing the damn thing. He's continuing to be challenged. Playing him today, taking advantage of him being able to do what he can do and being able to barrel up the baseball in games that matter, that's great. If he doesn't reach free agency because his body kind of burns out, that would be a shame. But right here and now, the Blue Jays are asking him to do stuff, and he's able to do it, and it's so much fun to watch as well.
Your excellent newsletter, Vlad Religion, is obviously Vladdy tinted. It has been since it came out. I've been day one sub, not to brag. Vlad has obviously been sort of the metronome by which this season has ticked by many times. You yourself and many people have pointed out, if it wasn't for Ohtani, he'd probably be the MVP. A bit of a scuffle in the beginning of August. What have you seen in terms of him? Obviously, he's on a hitting streak now. He seems to have turned things around. What is it for you that has been behind the strength, behind sort of the drop-off, and how he's got himself back on track?
I thought he looked tired, you know, when things are going bad. When things were going bad, again, it's all relative. When Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is slumping, he doesn't slump like even like Teoscar Hernandez, who, you know, is a favorite of this show and a favorite of you and I. But when Teoscar Hernandez is not going well, he strikes out all the time. You know, he's looking bad at the plate. That's not Vlad. He's so good at putting the bat on the ball that even when he's going bad, he's still hitting, you know, getting that incredible amount of exit velocity, just hitting the baseball as hard as he can and as hard as anybody does, but hitting it straight into the ground. And he maybe gets a little bit pull heavy. And, you know, you see the thing. I remember there was a great breakdown that Joe Siddle did at the beginning of the season when they were kind of highlighting what his fitness has been able to do, kind of get his lower half set and ready to go. And that way the head of the bat isn't like dragging behind, and he's really kind of able to get stuff out front, but also use that strength and use his ability to put the barrel on the baseball no matter where it is and go the opposite field. So, you know, Vlad is a lot like that. He's not like some of the great hitters the Blue Jays have had, you know, recently, like Jose Bautista, Josh Donaldson, Edwin Encarnacion. Those guys were dead red, you know, till they died. They were pull hitters, just looking to yank the ball over the fence. And that, not to say they're not great. They were able to do it, you know, as well as anybody has. But Vlad is so capable of dialing, I think, dialing his swing in, getting his timing right, getting a good look at pitches by hitting them hard the other way, hitting the ball hard on the ground to right field, or, you know, as he did the other night, you know, dumping it into those right field seats. But just, he's so strong. He's such an unbelievable hitter. He has such, like, you hate to say anything is innate because these guys work so hard to become what they are. But no, like, you can't teach some of the things that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does. And when he's feeling, I think if he's rested or if he's feeling good, would have loved to see him, you know, get a little bit of some days off here and there. I think it's still key if they can work those in just to keep his body fresh so that his bat doesn't start to lag and he doesn't start to roll over on stuff. But he just looks so good at the plate and just is able to produce as well as anyone we've ever seen, you know, in the Blue Jays uniform. And it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun to watch because you get that sense of expectation when he comes to the plate, like something awesome is about to happen, and then it does.
Yeah. It's been a crazy run, right? Because they've had parts this year where they hit everything, and they had parts this year where they couldn't pitch at all, and they had parts this year where the bullpen has fallen out, and it seems like they've had a great time in the last week, or the last 2 weeks, where everything has sort of fallen into place. And a huge part of that has been, obviously, Robbie Ray has been an ace for the better part of the year. But Steven Matz, quietly, like an ERA under two, has a really strong second half. How has he managed to sort of bounce back and become, you know, I think, I know personally, at least, he was a low expectations guy for me. His second half ERA through 10 starts after the All-Star game is 2.22 in 52 innings. How is he finding this success? How is this, or even the entire staff? Like, what's going on with this pitching staff that things have normalized and they're peaking at this time?
I wish I knew, frankly. I wish I could point to one thing with Steven Matz. The thing about Steven Matz, I think, is that right now, this is as good a season as he's ever had. Right, I mean, in terms of wins above replacement, he's a couple more starts away from nudging ahead of 2016. I think he was really good, and then another season, 2018, where he was healthy and pretty good. He's just really putting it all together. He's a starter. He's as good a fifth starter as you can find, because he's pitching like a guy who's not a fifth starter. The Blue Jays have a really winning team with Matt Bushman, who is way too young and hot to be a baseball coach. There's always this insanely muscle bound like dude who looks like he makes TikTok videos chopping wood and like has thirsty women in his mentions all day long. I'm like, who is that guy? And then it's like, oh, it's Matt Bushman. It's ridiculous. But between Bushman, Walker, the analytics team, they really helped these guys to set them up to succeed. And Robbie Ray is another example, right? They snapped Robbie Ray up so quickly in the offseason, and Robbie Ray was happy to sign back. He liked what he heard. They had some good things to say, some good rapport. And then so then you take it. And I mean, you look at what Matz has been able to do. You look at the way that he's able to throw strikes, the way that he's able to keep the ball in the ballpark. Like, that's pretty much all you can ever ask for. He's had a couple of rocky outings, but not of late. And it's just been like, when they traded for him, they gave up what, Sean Reed Foley. There's no way they even thought that he would be close to this. I mean, maybe you, like, ideally in a perfect world, yeah, maybe we'll get a career year at a Steven Matz, ha ha ha. And the next thing you know, here he is. So again, you sign guys with good stuff. You sign guys who have maybe demonstrated or the Blue Jays do in particular, have a demonstrated ability to get the most out of guys who have not frequently been able to kind of optimize and maximize what they've done. But I think when you look at Matz, you look at Ray, you look at some of the bullpen arms that they've pulled out of the woodwork over the years, they have a really winning team there that's able to support those guys. But the biggest thing, of course, is the pitchers being able to do it, being able to get those messages in a way that works for them and turn it into on-field production. So it's funny because, you know, it wasn't even that long ago, right, before this hot streak started, where it was like, who's the guy who might be the odd man out if Ross Stripling and Steven Matz, you know, maybe only one of those two pitchers can fit into the starting rotation. And now it's just like, well, Matz has been unhittable for 2 months, so what are you going to do? So it's a good problem to have if you're headed into the playoffs, and it's a good problem to have if you are trying to get into the playoffs, because you know you can rely on a guy who's got above average big league stuff, got three good pitches that he can throw, and then he's just getting a lot of outs, which is ideal.
I'll put you on the spot before I let you go. 75-62 as we speak, 25 games left, plenty of them against teams that matter. Give me your bold prediction for the final 25 games of this Blue Jays season.
I don't know. I think they got to win, what, like 15 or 16 of those games? I think 90 or 91 is probably the target. I mean, that's inherently doable. Again, with a team that has, what, six games left against Baltimore, but also another more series against the Yankees. Who else do they have? They have somebody else.
Twins.
The Twins. They got six against the Twins, right?
And Tampa, I believe.
And Tampa. So whatever, you pencil in those losses and you move on. But I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. I think the thing that might work in their favor is, even if, say, they can't get there and win 15 or 16 of these last 25 games, if you ask me if the Red Sox were on the precipice of collapse, I would say yes. But I would have said yes three different times in the last 2 months. And they've somehow staved it off. But I just don't think that they're good enough to sustain it. I mean, they're getting a lot of performances from like fucking Hunter Renfroe and people like that, that it's like, this can't be real. But I feel like the Red Sox might do the Blue Jays a lot of favors. And the Yankees, God only knows. I mean, the Yankees won 13 in a row. Now, what are they, 2-9 since that streak ended or something obscene like that? You look at the names in the lineup and you're like, that team's going to score a ton of runs. And they haven't, what was the stat last night? They haven't had an extra base hit since Saturday. And that was through Tuesday's game, which is just insane. But if neither of those teams are able to kind of right the ship, and again, it is only 25 games, the Blue Jays are insanely well positioned and are trending in the right direction, which doesn't have to be sustainable. Yeah, no, this isn't how good Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is, but all he's got to do is keep this hot streak going for 20 games, and they're home and laughing. So I don't know if I've answered your question appropriately in that I haven't given you an answer, but there's nothing to say the Blue Jays can't and won't be right in the mix when the end of the season comes.
Meaningful September baseball. It's all we ask for. Drew Fairservice, you know where to find him. He's on Twitter at Drew Groff, G-R-O-F. He is on the Athletic podcast twice a week with Caitlin McGrath and a incredible cavalcade of guests, present company excluded. And find him with the Substack, Vlad Religion, the ghostrunner on first writings that you know and love. Drew Fairservice, always my pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Have a great day.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to talk to you.
Something you may not know about your boy, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but when the Blue Jays aren't on in this household and we're watching sports, odds are we're watching tennis. It's a tennis household. My wife likes tennis a lot. We watch, you know, there's always stories about the men's and the women's side of the draws. And I am somebody, something I've said on this show that I like about the Olympics, is I love when the men's and women's stories are both just sort of presented as sports and one is not presented as women's sports, because you would never really present something as men's sports, right? It's just like, this is the tennis action. At the U.S. Open, this is what is happening, right? It's not at the, that's not the women's U.S. Open. It's the women's draw at the U.S. Open. But it's all the same thing. I love those things. And my wife, who, as we all know already, is an excellent sports reporter, as well as an excellent health reporter, as well as an excellent lifestyle reporter, at one point in her career, got pulled in to do a Rogers Cup. Didn't really know a lot about the women's and the men's game. I think this year, the year she went, it was women's tournament. But she as she does as a professional journalist, really dove in and learned a ton of stories and came out of it. Really big fans. I think in the way that some people fall in love with Netflix and Drive to Survive and F1, which I've tried it three times now. I've tried three times this year to get up and watch the NM and F1 race and get sucked into it, and not even close. Gotta tell you. Wish I could. Not even close. And I, again, Drive to Survive is a great show. I will watch all this stuff happen on Drive to Survive. The week to week, unfortunately, I tried every time. I especially tried, the qualifying and stuff. Can't do it. Too bad. And kudos to those of you who do. But anyway, tennis is sort of that thing. She came back very engrossed in the tennis world. And I, as a youth, never good at tennis, of course. Never good at anything, really. But the sport I would play most recreationally in my teen years was definitely tennis. In that we could break into our local tennis club, my friend Jamie and I. We could break in and play tennis against each other at night a couple times a week in the summer. And my wife and I played tennis last year. It was really hot. And we meant to do it more, but boy, I tell you, I didn't really do anything this summer. Anyway, a long way to go is when the Blue Jays haven't been on, tennis has been on, sometimes both at the same time. Last night, I know, it was split screen action. And we have been loving, the Canadians in the draw at the fucking U.S. Open this year. Awesome. Layla, Annie Fernandez, scorching through the women's draw. And listen, not that there's anything wrong if you make the semifinals, taking down absolute pinnacles of the sport on her way there. I mean, nothing easy anywhere. She beats Naomi Osaka, who obviously probably the most famous tennis player on the women's side in the world right now. Number three ranked. Layla takes her basically all the way to the limit. 7-5, 7-6, or pardon me, 5-7, 7-6, 6-4. Incredible, but sometimes these one-off upsets happen. And Osaka is obviously going through a challenging time in both her life and especially in her career in the way that she thinks about tennis and the way that she wants to play tennis. And, you know, obviously you wish her all of the best in that struggle and in that fight, and that hopes that no matter what happens, whether it be that she decides to come back to tennis and become a, you know, continue to be a elite level championship player, or she decides to do something else with her life or take time off. She's got enough money. She doesn't have to do anything if she doesn't want to. She could do philanthropy for the rest of her life. She could do whatever she wants. And as long as she finds happiness, that's all you can really hope for. But Layla, wasn't just an upset. It wasn't just a, you know, sometimes this happens in the men's draw, you know, Nick Kyrgios suddenly just sort of loses his passion for playing in the match. And the person that gets past him, you're sort of like, did they really pass that test? Well, she doubles it down three sets again, 2 days later, and beats Angelique Kerber, 16 seed, and a real battler, somebody that like really gets you into playing heavy points, and an extremely tough matchup. And then the quarterfinal against Svitolina, who almost pulls off, listen, Svitolina just about pulls off exactly what you expect out of a top five seed against an 18-year-old, where Layla comes out of the cannon, you know, really quick, 6-3 right away, and Svitolina answers very quickly. But the way that final set played out, I think it was 5-3 Layla at one point, and Svitolina breaks to make it 5-4 and then consolidates to tie it at 5, pushes it all the way to a tie break, and even in the tie break it goes to 5-5. The forehand, the lefty forehand down the line that Layla Annie Fernandez hits at 5-5, already going down in sort of the single shot memories that I can think of for anybody in this cohort of like really talented Canadian players. Incredible, really, really, really impressive. I was talking to my friend Vivek, who we hope is recovering from an Achilles injury, about her, because he's somebody that I've worked with in the past, and somebody that I've always loved talking about tennis with. And I was saying, man, because she doesn't hit. She looks, you know, a lot of the dominant players in the women's side are, you know, a little taller, a little bigger than she is, but she gets so low and gets to such incredible angles on her ball, her lower body strength and the center of gravity she gets down to. Really awesome. And she gets to everything. Really, really impressive. It's going to be tough. She takes on Sabalenka the day this comes out, Thursday. But regardless, has sort of made a statement and announced an arrival. And basically, you know, this was Bianca Andreescu. Obviously, she had more of a, you know, she had that sort of underground buzz run when she won in her return when she was 19. I think it was Miami. And then the showing at the Rogers Cup, National Make Open, whatever you want to call it, in Toronto. And then she parlayed that into US Open Championship. Obviously, Layla is coming at this not with that hot run, but as somebody that I think is, you know, when you hear about Canadian tennis, as somebody that is qualifying for these major tournaments, she's, you know, 66 in the world, which I think it's always important to frame that two ways, right? On one hand, you're like, oh man, that's on the outside of most tournaments looking in, I guess, at the top level. But it's also like, boy, 66 is nothing to sneeze at. 66th best player in the world at 18 years old is like, that's really impressive. That's really incredible. So, you know, she qualified for the Olympics. She, you know, all kinds of different things in her favor. Hope she can go. And what, just gutsy wins. That's the real thing for me, is these three straight wins against three of the toughest competitors of this generation. Really impressive and really gutsy stuff. And would have been easy to, you know, wouldn't have been a surprise if Svitolina had pulled out that win in the quarters. That would not have been a surprise. That's sort of like, she's such a champion and such a warrior that, you know, getting into that deep water, playing an 18-year-old in the deep water like that, that's a strategy to win. That was a way that she would win. And Layla fought it off and hit some incredible shots. So awesome. And on the other side, Felix Auger-Aliassime. Boy, oh boy, I love this kid. I really do. I think he's a guy that it was sort of hard to place after we saw the breakout. Chapo broke out, and it was all Chapo, and then he sort of followed up, and then we were waiting for them to play in New York, and he had to pull out with that heart thing. Listen, he's been a top 15 player He hasn't been able to really seal off a tournament. You know, 8 runner-up finishes in singles on the ATP Tour in different level tournaments. 1 doubles title, but still just 21 years old. And I think a guy that is really going to age strongly. I really do think, because like he's still a pretty skinny kid. Like I was watching with my wife and I was sort of like, he looks pretty small. We looked it up. He's 6'3". I think he gets, you know, as he ages, you already see he's already much bigger than he was. You know, when we first saw him, he was really sort of a lanky, like a really small kid when he was really young and had that first breakout a couple years ago. But 21 years old, I think really coming into his own, if he can, you know, the success he's had, he said it before his match in the quarters, you know, really been good at protecting his serve, losing focus on serve, sort of getting that into double fault trouble, has been something that's held him back and kept him from, you know, taking that next step. Again, we're talking about a 12th ranked player at 21 years old, still on a great track, but I think he's about to come into his own here. And I'm excited about Friday against Medvedev because I love Medvedev. I think he's a guy, especially at the US Open. This is going to be an interesting matchup. And Felix, and I think this is something interesting, is Felix generally, Felix and young players in general, Pat Shriver actually told my wife this. My wife wrote about these two for the Canadian Press yesterday, and Pat Shriver called, and I read that article, and in it, sort of Pat sort of mentioned, you know, and you can see this, the US Open crowd is getting behind these young players. That you've seen a big, you know, Layla's got a ton of support, and the guy that Felix played in the quarters, Alcaraz, had won a ton of support from beating Tsitsipas. But for Felix, before Alcaraz, he faced Tiafoe, who's American, who obviously gets the benefit of the doubt. We will see. So that basically that's 2 straight matches, because Alcaraz, only 18, really was winning over the crowd and playing exciting style and drawing Nadal comparisons. You know, in that quarterfinal, it wasn't really a pro Felix crowd. We'll see. Medvedev, famously in 2019, was a huge villain in front of the US Open crowd. So we will see if he plays into it this year against Ovrealia's team. I'm really looking forward to both of those semifinals. I think that's going to be a fun weekend. Both of the Canadians facing second seeds. And listen, the fact of the matter is, Felix, 12th seed in this tournament. 15 seed in the world is his career high. This is where you make those jumps, right? Quarterfinals is 8 people. You want to go from 12 to 8 to 4 to 1. You're making semis. You're making finals. So it'll be really good to see him take on Daniil Medvedev. What else? What else we got going on? I mean, boy, not a whole heck of a lot else. Watching Canada soccer, which I almost feel like people. I almost earlier this year when they were in the Gold Cup, I was almost like, all right, no more people being allowed to tell me how excited they are about Canada soccer when all I do is get disappointed. But I will say the draw against the United States with Alphonso Davies looking clearly like a world-class player on a field of sub-world-class players, very clearly the only one that is playing for a club like Bayern Munich anywhere out there. And that is directly a statement about Christian Pulisic. Also fun to see. The 1-1 and honestly just a bad mistake the other way, and some superiority from Fonzie, as they say. Really nice to see. But that's about it for the week of sports. Of course, coming up in the next week, the Blue Jays, it's only going to get more Blue Jaysy. I don't know how I could possibly explain that to you any other way than in the coming weeks we are going to talk about the Blue Jays more. How can we not? Crazy. Exactly what we wanted to have happen is happening. To round this all out, 24 more games for the Blue Jays this summer. They finish up against the Yankees, and it's 4 on the road in Baltimore through the weekend. So, yeah, oh boy, you know, doubleheader on Saturday, which I love. Love the Saturday doubleheader. Then on Monday, you start 3 at Toronto against Baltimore, against Tampa Bay, and then Minnesota. 4-3, so 6 games there. Tampa, Minnesota, New York, Baltimore. That is it the rest of the way. So October 3rd, it's less than a month. Very exciting. I think they pull it off. That's my big spoiler for you. I'm fully on board with the Blue Jays are going to pull this off. Boston is frauds. The Yankees have been frauds all year. Blue Jays pitching and hitting are doing more than enough. The bullpen problems are a lot less troubling when your starters are going 7 and striking out 10 and not giving up runs. It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier when the bullpen is like, all right, let's do Meza and Romano tonight. Or let's do Romano and Romano. And who knows? Pearson? Maybe. And, you know, if Merriweather and Baruchy are going to come back in this team, all I can request is that they come back for the last 7 innings of the year each. That would be great for me. They could show up, pitch those 7 innings. That would be great. All right. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to open up the mailbag, give you recommendations for your match of the week and song of the week, which is basically a way for me to talk about wrestling for 10 minutes, which, listen, if you've made it this far, you may as well listen to that too, right? All that and more coming up on the back half of Sportsville. All right, Jake, of course, on the East Coast, so there is no Song of the Week this week from him. I guess I don't really have anything either. I haven't been in a car, so I haven't heard music, you know? It's sort of the way it goes. I listened to Certified Lover Boy while I was out on the treadmill on Monday, and I'll tell you, I don't remember anything about it, so I apologize for my lack of music review, but also, I would say this to you, if you're listening to this and like wonder what a Song of the Week is, you know, who cares what I'm listening to, you know? You're matching my musical taste shouldn't be on your radar of things, because like I got nothing. Just I had no taste in that, so I don't even know what my song of the week would be. Something that played around me that I nodded to. Anyway, match of the week. I will tell you. You want to talk about what things you should look to me for? You're talking to a 35-year-old white guy with a beard who wears black T-shirts. It's one of two things, right? You ask him about music, or you ask him about wrestling. Jake isn't here, so I'm going to have to do the wrestling. All Out, I mean, Jesus. All Out was the best pay-per-view that I have ever seen front to back in real time. And I use that to quantify is I'm sure many people will look back and be like, WrestleMania 17 was better, or X pay-per-view was better. I'm talking about pay-per-views that I sat down and watched from the moment they started to the moment they went off air, not that I heard they were good and went back and sought them out. Not any other, from sitting down, start to finish, as they happen live, All Out takes the cake. That's as good as wrestling can get, I think. That was a special night. You get CM Punk's first wrestling match in 7 years, wrestling a totally new style, wrestling like he's playing a old wrestler on a TV show. Maybe I'm trying too hard to watch the show heels. And not succeeding in finding a link, but doesn't end in RU. Thank you for that tip, Todd Goldsby. But it seemed like he was almost playing like an old South wrestling character in the ring. I loved it. I loved him against Darby. I loved the opener, Eddie against Miro. I thought it was amazing. The tag match in the cage will be on many people's match of the year list. Many people said it was their favorite cage match of all time. It hit heights that we all expected it to, which is saying something because it had very high expectations. The show, generally, All Out. We put out on the Wrestling Brain Twitter to quickly plug Wrestling Brain, which is now also a podcast. You know, we put out polls before the show. How excited are you for this show? And it was unanimously, people were going into it, were 7 out of 7. And everybody came back to it saying it was at least a 7 out of 7, if not higher. So very rarely do things completely pay off in that way. So pretty wild. Pretty wild. I'm thrilled. And listen, I'm missing a ton of matches and a ton of moments. There's still way more that I haven't even brought up that are all worth remembering and smiling and laughing about. And, you know, I was just thrilled. It's seeing the payoff like that. Too awesome. What I watched this week. What did we started watching. You know what we watched is Vinny Chase. Adrian Grenier has a show on Netflix called Clickbait. he gets captured, and the video of him being captured gets put up on the internet, and if it gets 5 million hits, he gets killed, and you're sort of unraveling this mystery of who's captured him and all the different fallout. And it's one of those ones where, like, listen, your mileage for everything seemed perfect in this family, and it's like, but beneath the surface, it was it's every twist. You know, I could give you just that outline. You could probably lay out to me what most of the plot twists are. I don't even need to give you specifics. Anyway, which all is to say, a great little watch with my wife on the couch to talk to and talk about. And Vinny Chase, I mean, come on. The guy is Queens Boulevard. Mailbag time. The first one comes from the Stump Podcast. Who would be the Jays' wild card starter if they got there? All things being equal and nobody being needed in down the stretch to make sure they get there. I think it's got to be Robbie Ray at this point, right? I mean, he's been so good. And he's such a dominant force when he's at his absolute best. I think, you know, you're sort of playing the game that if he gets tagged, he probably gets tagged for solo home runs. And the worst case scenario, I don't want to say that out loud, worst case scenario, but like you're planning for the disaster is like he only gives you five-ish. So I think you probably go with Ray. And then, the question is if you have like an emergency break glass second guy, or you're like, okay, well, we're going to get four innings from our bullpen or more. I guess if you're at that point, if you're worried about bullpen innings, it's probably too late anyway. So yeah, anyway, long way to say that my answer to that is obviously Robbie Ray. You give a little bit of consideration to big game Hyunjin Ryu. I think obviously also get some consideration, but I don't think you're seriously putting rookie Alec Manoah in that spot. Not with the way that his command sort of left him in that big Oakland start. Not that I think that's predictor or a barometer of how he will pitch in big innings, in big games, but long story short, Robbie Ray's earned it, right? Luca asks, what is the most cursed item you've ever seen on a menu at a restaurant bar? This is the old George Costanza notices that there's lobster on the menu when he's out for dinner with his mom. Most cursed item? I'll tell you this. Skyline chili is fucking terrible. Skyline chili is a cursed thing. I'm sorry to anybody in the Nasty Natty who listens to this. But Skyline Chili in Cincinnati is disgusting. That's a cursed menu item. Chili on spaghetti? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. YJ's asks me, what's your favorite thing about Pantina Drumhouse? My favorite thing about Pantina Drumhouse, which is the best place that I know of, to be frank, to buy vintage drums on Instagram. My favorite thing about Pantina Drumhouse is when the mysterious admin plays the drums in the story. I love hearing the drums. James Gleason, how well do you think Alejandro Kirk would do in the G1? Listen, a tournament like the G1, yeah, endurance is a huge part of it. So I think you look at, for him, you would look at Tomohiro Ishii as sort of your base, right? As you have sort of an immovable object guy who's hard to knock out. But also, he's not so athletic that he can have 25-minute bomb fests every single night, right? He can do it, but he can't do it every single night, you know, however many days in a row that is, 20, 30 days in a row. So I think you would look at Tomohiro Ishii as the comparable, right? As a guy that probably isn't ever going to win the tournament, but probably gets the best match out of two or three of the people in the tournament. And you always come out of it being like, damn, I wish he had done more. And maybe he earns like a mid-level title shot, an open weight title or like a U.S. title shot by beating one of the champions in the tournament, you know? Mike asked me to have Drew or Jonah on to talk about the Blue Jays. Well, I already did, so. Danny, if you were paid $1 for every goldfish cracker you could eat in a 24-hour period, how many would you eat? $1. You know, honestly, I would probably eat... here's the thing. Here's the honest-to-God truth. I would probably eat two packages because no matter how many you eat, it's not enough money for it to, like, significantly change your life, right? like, it would be nice to have whatever two packages is, $500, I don't know, $250. It'd be great, and it would be cool, and I could put that towards something I like that got me some joy. But for me personally, like, the difference between eating two packages and four packages, or, like, you know, the difference between eating 500 and 750, it's just not worth it to me. Just not worth it to me. How many would you eat, right? It's not how many could I eat. I'd probably eat two packages worth, and then be like, all right, I don't want any more. I wouldn't, like, right? I wouldn't, like, punish myself. I wouldn't be punishing myself. I think that's giving money too much power. You know what I mean? You got to think mentally. You think mentally. That's a smart thing to say. James Nielsen, what do you think about Canada suddenly emerging in sports like tennis, soccer, and basketball? I think I handled that pretty well, you know, earlier. Not to brag. No, I love it. Again, tennis, and we are not exclusive to just cheering for the Canadians. We were big CC Pass fans until this tournament, which is hilarious to watch him get turned on. And as I said, I like Medvedev. We hate Zverev because he's a sexual assaulter, obviously. Muguruza on the women's side. So I'm thrilled that there are more Canadian kids, mostly because they all seem really likable. Layla seems like a real natural baby face, and I really like Felix. And also, there's some low-key heel potential as well, I think, with Dennis and maybe Bianca. Maybe Bianca could be a little bit like good guy, bad guy, good cop, bad cop. And I hope they all one day. I hope we get all four of them in a Davis Cup team one year. That would be amazing. And in terms of soccer, we said before that women's soccer gold medal is going to be one of the moments of the year for me, if not the highlight, depending on what the Jays do. Like, I was very emotional over that. I think it's great. Yeah, I love seeing Davies become a left back for Bayern Munich. That's unbelievable. Yeah, I think that's great. And I think what I think about it, you know, to not dig too deep and take too much time, is I think it's very easy to say things like, once upon a time, all our best athletes got into hockey or whatever, or, like, you know, our best athletes are choosing those paths. But I think what's happened, more so that our best athletes are choosing those paths, I think what's really important, and I think you can look at the women's sports in this country especially as a sign of this, is kids are now growing up seeing those things as achievable, right? They see the women's soccer team, the women's national soccer team, as a thing to aspire to, and look at the young players that contributed to the women's championship, right? Grosso and you know, 20-year-olds on this team that when Canada started this run were in high school or younger, you know. Women's hockey much very much the same way. I think we're on the cusp of that hockey really figuring itself out. So I think it's great. I think it's really great. I think you look at the WNBA, the impact it's allowed Canadian basketball to have for women, how many good Canadian basketball players there are on the women's team now. And, you know, people like Steve Nash, how important that is to our basketball. You know, Joey Votto's talked about Larry Walker and seeing that example. So I think what's most exciting about it is that now it is more clearly a path that our young athletes can aspire to. I think that's what's really important about it for me, and what makes me really happy about it. Josh McRae asks, which of these options would you choose? 100% chance to sign either Ray or Simeon, but not both? Or 50% you land one, 25% both, 25% league neither? This is the old "you take the money" in the game show. And when I watch game shows, I'm always screaming at them to take the money. So I'm tempted to go 100% they sign one. But I'll leave it up to you, the audience. Tweet at me. Tweet at Sportsfeld when you listen to this. Would you rather have 100% chance that you get Ray or Simeon? Or 50% one, 25% both, 25% neither? 25% chance. Would you take half of the half on the offshoot that you get both, with the same level chance that you get neither? I think just locking up one of them would be too important to me. I think it might be Simeon. I don't know. Chris Lund, who we love to see in the mailbag. If you could send Jake on assignment anywhere for maximum peak content, where are you shipping him off to? Honest to God, it's probably the East Coast PEI. It's where he's happiest. You'd put like a show out there or something, you know? If you could get like a sporting event out there, That would be great. But Jake, you know, I respect this about him. Jake is a celebrity. He doesn't generally, right? Like, he's not a big, like, I need to produce content about my life guy. You know what I mean? In a way that, say, I might be, where I like the vanity projects and the talking about myself all the time. You know, obsessed with it. Jake very much, like, I feel like would want to go on assignment, like, as he is now, and not even have to do anything. Barely post, you know, he posts on Instagram, which is nice. I get to see what he's up to. But yeah, I don't know if he would be, if he would want to be an on assignment guy. But as for peak content, honestly, you know what? It might be to go see Spurs. I think that's probably the funniest situation to throw him in. For like, if we were like, okay, Jake, I'll pay for your travel and your lodgings and your ticket. I just need you to give me a 5-minute video about you going to see Spurs. I think that'd be pretty funny. Because it's like, you want to get him out of his natural environment, right? A Jays thing or anything really even in Canada, I think. He'd be too comfortable, right? It'd be easy for him to be in. And for maximum content, you want somebody out of their comfort zone. So I think we send him across the ocean. Film him even taking the flight, right? That would be funny. Get him over there cheering for Spurs. Because then he would have a really positive emotional reaction amid all the like anxiety of travel and organization and flying and like not knowing where he is and not knowing where to go, not being comfortable. Like I think that's your answer. Max peak content. BK, one of the greats, asks, what's one food item you would comfortably eat at home but would never even consider ordering at a restaurant? I have a hard time ordering like scrambled eggs at a restaurant. Like it's hard for me to order eggs any other way than like I go out to a restaurant for breakfast. I'm either having Benedict or I'm like so hungover that I want like an egg sandwich. You know what I mean? If I go to a restaurant to meet and order scrambled eggs and bacon is like hilarious. It's like, I don't know, man. You should be able to handle scrambled eggs in your house. Just the way I feel. And I'm also, I'm a fan of all day breakfast. I'm a fan of diners, but to go there and get like scrambled or over hard to me is like absurd. Rick, this last one, as a non-certified, non-music knower butter, what have you been listening to for the last week, Zoobs? I listened to the entirety of the Wrestling Brain podcast. Nothing. I wish. As I said, I put on Certified Lover Boy to go on the treadmill and don't remember anything about it. I don't remember anything. I remember anything he said or how any of the songs sounded or how many songs deep I got into it. And listen, I will say this. Again, I'm 35 years old. When I was 25, a new Drake album was the coolest thing in the world that could possibly happen to me. But I'm in a different place, right? I live in Kitchener. I'm married. Very little like, oh, I get this in Drake raps for me anymore. Even the street names, right? He's not talking about Kitchener, so unfortunate. But listen, back in the day, driving around and on the streetcar at night, listening to Drake, you're like, damn, this guy's me. No, but yeah, so nothing. I guess I'll give that a shot. And then I'll put on like a random, what I call high school mixtape, which is all the songs I liked when I was in high school that are loud that I listen to on the gym. So I don't know. Sorry. I wish, right? I think people keep wanting to crack this thing that I have this secret music thing, but truly not. Truly not. Anyway, that's it for another week. We are going to close it out. We are going to close things out with Sad Not Sad, which I will bring to you after this. Just wanted to say before the Sad Not Sad, which I guess is going to be short, right? Because I'm the only one here. Thank you so much for listening to the episode this week. I mean, if you listen to the whole episode, which features, let's be honest, 45 minutes to 50 minutes of me talking to myself, I appreciate it. I appreciate anybody listens to this show ever. It's wild to me. I know a lot of you listen to this are related to me. A lot of you are listening to this out of sort of blood loyalty, which I really appreciate. But, you know, it, it, it's a very unique show we do here, and it's hard to just ask somebody, hey, can you come on and do the whole nine yards? Come on and co-host, and we will have no real prep other than the questions, and we'll just sort of freestyle about whatever sports we want. Also, I'm very lazy, and I don't. This is the other thing about booking guests. I'm just very lazy. It's hard for me to, and I get nervous, right? Put myself out there, ask people to come on shows. I would need a second person to be good at asking people to come on things and like reaching out. That's the one thing I could always use in my life. I guess that's what a producer. It's called a producer, isn't it? The producer. Yeah. Anyway, I thank you for coming along as I just sort of have talked. If this is your sort of thing, boy, oh boy, do I have a show for you. Blue Monday, every Monday, comes out on the Patreon, patreon.com/sportsfeld. It is me mostly talking to myself. Sometimes I will do, as I have today on this episode, I will talk to a guest for 15 to 20 minutes. Sometimes it's Jonah Bierenbaum. Sometimes it's somebody else. It's a lot of different people have come on there, and I really enjoy it. It's a great way for me to end my week every Sunday. Doing Blue Monday, I really enjoy it as well. We look back at historical years and moments on a show called Sportsfeld Storytime, which comes out on Friday. You probably noticed them coming into this feed on days that aren't Thursday morning, right? And then every month we do a monthly mailbag, which is just like the mailbag on this show, except longer, because we don't do the rest of this stuff. And that's why some of you are here. I know that for a fact. You told me to my face. So regardless, that's just a long way to say, if you want all that, patreon.com/sportsfeld, and a way to say thank you so much for listening so far, because again, just me. You're stuck with me. I'm just in my living room rambling, right? There's nothing else going on. Which is, again, another way to say not sad this week. I'm so happy Jake got to have a vacation. He won't ever listen to this. This is the funny thing. But he deserves it, man. That guy really... You listen to this show, folks, and you remember when Jake was unable to find employment, right? And he was sort of... It was his... The sad that it was in the background of his head, basically, at all times. And he's in one of the most turbulent times for people of all types... has really steadily, like, he just fucking took it, and he was like, you know what, I'm going to do this because I'm going to provide, and I don't need to be defined by what I do all the time, right? I don't need to be, I can do a job and do it every day and still be Jake and still be what makes me and still be around my loved ones and have fun and go on trips. And he's been at that so long. I'm so glad he took the time to go and treat himself and relax and have fun with some pals out on the East Coast and do the best thing you can do, which is to eat seafood and look at the ocean. I mean, phew, the dream. So I hope he has an absolute blast. He will be back next week with me, hopefully talking about your playoff seeded Toronto Blue Jays. That would be pretty sweet, wouldn't it? And then the week after that, I am out. I'm going to be on my turn to go vacation. I'm going the exact opposite of Jake. I'm going to the West Coast to hang out with my wrestling brain co-host, Josh Custodio, and see Vancouver, which I've never seen, never been past Edmonton. Edmonton's the furthest west I've ever been in Canada. And it's not Vancouver, I've been told. So I'm really excited about that. I don't know what Jake's going to do for that episode. I didn't tell him what I was going to do with this one. Maybe he'll find a guest host. Maybe he won't. Who knows? That is for you to see 2 weeks from now on this show. As I mentioned, if you want more Sportsfeld, patreon.com/sportsfeld has all the stuff I said was in the show already. And that is it for another week. All I have left to say to you is, Jake, I miss you. Come home soon. And thank you all so much for listening to Sportsfeld.